First, I'd like to thank the organizer for inviting me to the KRTP for this exciting workshop. I have been here for more than 1 week, enjoying very much. And also, this is a really nice place. So I will talk about ion nictide superconductivity. And presumably this is much because of a short history, probably less controversial. Mm-hmm. And my talk, I will try to understand that from strong coupling point of view. I will explain to you why we look at this. I will not argue this is a strong coupling system, but I try to see how far we can, how much we can understand from this point of view. So these are my collaborators, Wei-Chang Chen, my postdoc, and Kai Yu Yang, currently postdoc at ETH, and also Yi Zhou. And these two are doing ALDA, so who has help us to understand some band structure. So this is outline. First, I will give an introduction about the nictide. Then I will try to derive effective Hamiltonia and pairing interaction of the system from strong coupling point of view, and discuss the pairing symmetry, and make some comparison argument or similarity between ion nictide and copper oxide. And finally, I will spend a few minutes to propose a pi junction loop to probe the anti-phase S wave, which seems to be likely the phase superconducting symmetry state for the some of the nictide. So these are materials first discovered in February of 2008 with TC about 26 Kelvin, and this is called the 1111 compound. The good thing is basically you can repress any of them to get superconductivity. So this is somehow different from cuprate. In cuprate, you basically you cannot repress copper by anything else. But here, the first discovery is to repress oxygen. Later, I think they repress lanthanum by some other metal, and then arsenate can be repressed, and this even ion can be partially repressed, all these. So far, the highest TC in this class of materials is about 55 or 56 Kelvin, and this is called a 122 compound. I think has a very good single crystal, and this is the ion superconductor without arsenate. So all these are layered lattice compound. These are the 1111. You see, this is the ion. This is arsenate. So these will be the most important building blocks. And this is a 122 compound. So similar to cuprate, they are quite 2D, but I think two dimensionality is not as good as in cuprate. And the parent compound, I think, let me discuss 1111. This is in x equals 0, it's the parent compound. So this is a semi-metal. And there's an anomaly around 150 Kelvin. That's likely related to the structure phase transition. And the parent compound has a phase transition to SDW. This is the collinear SDW. This is the ion. So this is all spin one direction, and next it's among another direction. So moment for 111 it's quite small, but for 122 compound it's about one Bohr magnon. So that indicates the possibility for the anti-ferromagnetic fluctuations to be play important role. And this is the phase diagram with doping, and there's some argument whether there is a coexistence regime between SDW and the superconductivity from different groups. But for the very small doping, it's antiferromagnetic. Then when you dope, for instance, here it's repressed oxygen by other atoms, you get a superconductivity. So that has some similarity with the cuprate. And the possible magnetic origin of superconductivity, and that electron phonon mechanism is unlikely, as calculated by Marvin Cohen and the other groups. And because if they do calculation straightforward, they get a TC about 1 Kelvin or below. And another argument for possible magnetic origin is because of the SDW below the 130 Kelvin. It's interesting, this is about half of the nail temperature in the undoped cuprate. And those are the magnetic moment and also layer structures. So electronic structure, it also shows quality two dimensionality, and this is the Fermi. This is the parent compound, that Fermi energy, and the band structure calculation of 1111 around the EF, showing basically those most are from ion 3D characters. So there are very nice experiment, ARPAS experiment on the superconducting gap. So this is on the this 1,2 doped, the 1,2,2 compound by Hong Ding et al. And that is the gamma point. So they see the superconducting gap. It's a Fourier gap. So there are, these are the different pocket. Fermi pocket, as I will show you later. Okay. So it's so that experiment shows it's basically it's a fully gapped S-wave superconductor. However, whether the S-wave is universal to all the ion-based superconductivity remains to be a question. Recent penetration depth measurement of Molay et al. On this compound with TC 6 Kelvin from scanning squid, okay, indicates nodal superconductivity. So it's possible the superconductivity symmetry is related to materials. But I will focus on 1111 and yeah. No, they didn't say anything. They're that experiment. They see the experiment measure penetration depths consistent with it's a kind of in some very delicate measurement. Yeah, indicated the nodal. Yeah.
So they see parallels.
Yes. Yeah.
Linear T. Not
linear with T.
Okay. Yeah. Not everybody.
Huh?
Not everybody. Some people claim that it's phonetic.
Not on that sample.
Not on
that
sample. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think this sample it's seems pretty nice experiment. Yeah. So, but I will focus on 1111L122. Okay, so that material. So about the electron correlations, likely to be moderate. As I mentioned, it's a semi-metal. It's not a mod insulator when the system is not doped. Okay, so this is different from cuprate. But however, the system is also not a simple metal. And likely to be near, but at the metallic site of mod insulate metal transition, as indicated by the MFT of cartilage. And there are open issues for the spin density wave, whether this is due to Fermi surface nesting or due to, like, can be described by better by J1, J2 model. Some of the audience are involved. And the another experiment fact is observed from thermal surface. It's similar to the LDA, but the mass is renormalized by like 1.5 times. I think there's some new experiment showing one of those compounds, the Fermi surface observed is different from LD, but most I think are similar. Okay. So I think overall picture is that this is a system likely to be in the modulator regime in the correlations. Okay. So this is try to is to see not this is axis represent anything. Okay, you can this is the weak and the strong correlation, and cuprate we know this is a mod insulator when it's not doped. So we can view this is a doped mod insulator. That this is from weak coupling, so ion nictide is likely to be in this regime, but the correlation may not be very very weak. So there are two approaches. Most logical approach from the weak coupling because this is a metal. Okay, so that's many people have been working on that. But what I would like to see is if we start from strong coupling, see there are some properties like superconducting symmetry, whether we can get agreement with the weak coupling approach. Okay, so that's the strong and the weak coupling approach to cuprate and to the ion-based superconductivity. As Morris described, the cuprate is strong coupling theory, but you can use the function RG theory to look at the problem, especially at the overdoped regime. And those result from the weak coupling approach may shed, I think, an important light to our understanding. So the ion-based superconducting is just the opposite. We have, I think, a functional RG calculation by Dong Hai Li. As in next week, Peter is going to tell us his theory from weak coupling, I assume, right? Starting from weak coupling approach. So I will talk about the strong coupling approach. I think there are other people like Qimiao Xi, okay, also took this view. So what do we start? So starting Hamiltonian will be, one is the band structure, the other is onside cooling interaction. So I will discuss briefly band structure and for the parent compound, this is 3D6, okay, six electrons on the D level on each ion. So that means I will consider only two orbitals, like DXD and DYZ are important. And I will show you this, it's approximately okay if we consider the low temperature physics near the Fermi surface. And this is the LDA calculation, and they drop this. This you can see this dark ones means the heavy weight, light ones the light weight. So the five different orbitals you can see that here, and that's the Fermi level. So you can see this is mainly it's XZ plus YZ, and with some XY near the Fermi surface. So because it's not easier to handle five orbitals, even you calculate, probably you get a numerical result. So we decided to just focus on two orbitals, okay, because these two orbitals seem to dominate. So the two orbital model, it's tie binding fitting, we will use actually we follow this Nahu et al. Okay, and what they did is look at this. This is the ion. This is arsenet. You have Brown zone is halved because of this arsenet. It's up and down. So, okay, and to consider tie bonding model with two different orbitals, xz, dxz, dxz, and dyz, and to choose those T's, the Hopf integrals, to get the Fermi surface similar to what LDA calculate. And in this is in the extended zone, and the end point, of course, in the reduced zone will be folded in the gamma point. Note that actually this Fermi surface, that part is incorrect compared to the LDA if we do if we consider in the extended zone. But it probably will not affect that much. Okay. So the Hamiltonian we started with, this is the hopping term, then we add this on-site Coulomb term. So that is just typically on-site interaction, and also we have a Hund's loop coupling J. And this U and the U12 normally are related by this formula. U12 equal to U minus 2J. So U to be large, we consider the parent compound atomic configuration is 3d6, two electrons on two orbitals. We will ignore the other three orbitals, and so that system is a half field in a sense. So that if large U, we get the insulator. Okay. Of course, this is not what the experiment found, which is a semi-matter experiment. However, we want to just try to see how much we can go. Okay. So if we have electron doping as in 1111, then some of the iron atoms becomes 3d6, and this will be the charge carriers. So 3d6 is of two holes, and 3d7 is spin one half of a single hole. It's more convenient to use the hole notation within this scheme. Okay. So that basically will be the picture in the strong coupling U limit of for the nictide. You have such a kind of state, of course, you may have different spins. You have 3d7 state. Now, first, I take away three orbitals, only two orbitals here. Only two orbitals. 3d6 is you have two electrons because I have only two orbitals, so you have two holes. Otherwise, I'd put three electrons in this figure. It just
Hopf model
probably that's equivalent, but if you consider non-reactive action,
is this whole picture is equivalent to this
picture? But this is equivalent, except that the Hopf integral maybe take a minus per sign,
It's not symmetry, but the noise is
Excuse me, Steve, what do you say?
I said you can always look in terms of holes. If
yeah. So if I consider large limit, then the parent compound, of course, you have this kind of spin-spin touching near this neighbor and the next near this neighbor. So that it's roughly consistent with the SDW observation. And also you can get a collinear magnetic order depends on which spin-spin coupling is larger, this one. I think here it's J2, it's larger. And then for the doped system, so we can consider these 3d7 carriers move in a two-hole background. So these are the carriers, and these blue ones are the two-hole state, which is spin. If Hund's rule is large, then it's a spin one. Can take three different values. So that's the kind of picture. So this is similar to the TJ model. You have holes and you have spin up and down. Okay, so holes moving in the background of a spin up down state. So this, now next we can consider the effect interaction between the carriers on neighboring sites I and J, like this. Okay, so that is just a simple second order perturbation. We have virtual state. Okay, so you can gain like this. You can energy by virtual hopping. Then you can consider this 3D7 two state can be either spin singlet or spin triplet to get an effect of Hamiltonian. So that's what we get. I consider you have two orbitals and M, okay, and you have a possibility for spin singlet, you have a spin triplet, that's all you have. So that the effect of Hamiltonian can be written in terms of two terms, and this NM indicate the orbital, okay, and IJ the size, so you have basically spin singlet pair hopping, and this is the coefficient. And you can have spin triplet pair hopping, this is the coefficient. And that singlet here, it just has this normal form, and this A and B, this pairing coefficient can be derived in this form. So so this is similar. If I drop that term, there's no spin triplet. I don't have the orbital. It's a reduced just a TJ model without T. Let's say, yeah, this can be derived. If one orbital, then it becomes the J term. Okay, so this is can be viewed as extension of the J term, including two orbitals.
So, these Hamiltonians are these terms are derived in the large unit of the original Hamiltonian that you showed us.
Yes.
So there's also the Hund-Sruck coupling. Do you take them to
the Hund-Sruck coupling is there?
That's just fixed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I assume U, J are larger, much larger than T's.
Yeah. That's the only assumption.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So at J over U equal to about one third, the B term becomes large, so spin triplet most favored because you get this becomes very large. Okay, so that is consistent with your intuition, because when Hund-Sruck is large, then you would favor spin triplet. And this T and M is just hopping between two orbitals. Okay. And let's see, yeah, that's all. I have used the relation between U12 and U in this expression. So this is just repeat what I said, okay, compared to exchange interaction in single orbit Hubbard model, and you get this term. This is just S dot SISJ minus a quarter NIMJ. Okay, J is given by this if I have only one orbital. And actually, that effect Hamiltonian I described, it's for two orbital systems, was given by Castagna about 30 years ago in study of V203. But they gave the Hamiltonian, that effect interaction, a different form, okay, in terms of four C operators. So you recombine them, actually, all result is identical theirs, but written in the in terms of pair pairing scattering form. So this is the old result, and this is just you can write down in another way, just in terms of pairings. So what we can do now? So first I will give a qualitative analysis. Okay, the pairing term in K-space. I will consider a simple case. Let's see. This A is just a Fourier transform of the AIJ. Okay, and actually we found a lot of physics can be understood with this Hamiltonian in diagonal part of B's. Okay, so I will focus on the singlet part, and the triple part, of course, it can be studied separately. If we and try to see the diagonal part, then we just denote this A and M equal to this is the diagonal part, and we can have some analytical result for the pairings. Then,
sure, I understand. That, does that mean that the, where are the two electrons or two holes that are involved? Are they on different sites in this picture?
Yeah, that's different sites. So the background is two holes on the sides, and the carriers are only one hole on the sides. And that interaction I discussed is the two single hole interaction. And they are the carriers in the large U limit version.
And the picture is there on different sites, but interacting through this effective exchange.
Yes, yes.
As opposed to being on different orbitals on the same site.
Yes, that's the two holes on different sites with exchange interaction, with which exchange interaction is orbital dependent here.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, there's a hopping. This single hole can move through the two holes background. That's the hopping part. So first I will get a qualitative picture, just to focus on this diagonal part of the B. And then we can just consider these one, two are the orbitals. You have this version, okay. I have T1, T2 just hopping between nearest neighbor and the next nearest neighbor and the different orbitals and the same orbital, all these just a constant, okay. And so these are, you can write on these. Now, then we can study the intra-pocket pairing and the inter-pocket pairing. And for instance, I consider Q, three different Qs, 0, 0, that's the intra-pocket. And the pi 0, that means these two pocket. And the pi is the between the two electron pocket, okay. And in this case, this diagonal A11 and A22 dominate, and both attractive favor same sign in one pocket. That means the inter pocket is attractive pairing. And if I consider 0 pi, then this dominate, but both are repulsive. So that is in favor of a different sign between electron and the hole pocket. This is the electron pocket, this is the hole pocket. And the colors represent the orbitals. So here is basically it's dyz orbital, and the black ones is dxz orbital. And this hole pocket is somewhat mixed, but these are the red ones, these are the black ones, okay. So you can see the pairing, it's intra-pocket, it's attractive S-wave, and inter-pocket, this attractive, this repulsive. So you want to have different phase from this analysis. So this in this analysis, we ignore this off-diagonal part, just consider the diagonal part. So that is the numbers I just show you, okay. And the intra-pocket is 20 in the unit of T square over U, and this is 12, and this is -3, this is 3, okay. So these are red and black indicate different orbitals. So we see that the important message is intra-pocket is attractive, these are attractive, but these are the repulsive. So they like to have a different phase. You can consider these are two, just like a Josephson tunneling between these two pockets. Okay. And we can do a quantitative study. I don't have much time, I just go very quickly. And solve this gap equation self-consistently. Okay, and only we found two states, one is A1G and B1G, S-wave and D-wave state. To have a lower energy, or others are not very good in energy. And some details about normalization, we'll just renormalize the parameters, okay. And we have mean, just that's mean feed approach, consider these NM are in the orbital space, okay, one in orbital space. Then we can have mean field Hamiltonian, and this alpha beta are in the band, upper band and the lower band. So let me just show you the result. And so.
Don't feel pressed by this. Let that clock run off.
Okay.
We're going to all get lunch eventually.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So what is this V, that's pairing scattering in the band picture. Now it's a 2x2 matrix. So that's the only thing different from the usual BCS. And we have two orbitals. Okay, the diagonal that you get upper band and the lower band. Okay. And so we have that's the S wave. This is for the D wave symmetry. So let me go to this result. And this is the calculator in terms of using the parameter T over U equal to 0.1. And this is the J over U. And this is the energy. And the red are S wave, and the D's are the D wave. So for J over U, very close to 0.3, the P wave will win because you have Hounsrou dominates, that triplet wing. We did not plot that here. So just compare the two states. So for small t, there is a regime, D wave has a lower energy than S wave. Okay. And for T over U equal to 0.2, the S wave always has a lower energy. Okay, that's the energy. Compared. And we can discuss the quasi-particle gap. And the quasi-particle gap is an extended wave, extended S wave. You have this is, let's see, this is theta. This is theta is around the Fermi surface. You have Fermi pocket, okay, for the electron and for the hole. And so it's not the extended S wave with the energy around the Fermi pocket. It's not identical, but the deviation is not very large. Okay, there you see from here to here. And this is for the whole pocket. And for the D wave, like we have that in the hole, you have like this. This is around quarter pi. This is not exact zero, but very, very close to zero. And because the reason is we have not gap, it's 2x2 matrix. Okay. So you solve this to get the quasi particle. And this is the electron pop.
Can I make sure I understand the lower one?
So yes.
If I think of the electron pocket out around pi zero, for example, then the gap, I'm not sure what's up. The red means it's probably positive or negative. I forget your.
The energy, this quarter particle energy is always positive.
Okay, I'm sorry. I see what I'm missing.
Yeah.
This energy, I was looking.
Yeah.
I was thinking gap. Okay.
So can I ask you also, you can switch the symmetries by changing this ratio. Can you do it the same with shifting the chemical potential or with doping in this model?
You mean?
You go from S wave to D wave,
yes,
by changing the ratio J over U.
Yes.
Now, suppose that I dope it, I shift the chemical potential. Is there such possibility in this model?
I think that will be dependent on doping. The doping we choose is to fit the Fermi pocket. Yeah, but you change quite a lot. Will be this line will depend on the doping, but I don't think it will be very sensitive.
Can you say which way it shifts if you say electron dope? Does it go to the left or the right? You haven't looked at that.
No, I haven't looked at it. But it can be taken a look.
Can we come back to what I was asking? I'm not sure. Am I to think of E as the gap as I go around the electron Fermi surface?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the E, the theta I plot is around this, this is theta zero, this is half pi. It's around this, yeah.
So as I go around that,
Yes.
Then what confused me, or what I'd like to understand, is in the D-wave case, am I to think as I look at the D-wave light, when I look at the electron, I see that it has some sign. The gap has a positive value as I go around that one.
Yes.
I go around the whole one.
This whole one, yeah.
As I go around the whole one, it's also positive.
No. This is a quasi particle. It's not the gap.
I see.
Function. So if the quasi particle energy, quasi particle energy is the gap.
So in this case, all this is showing us is around the whole, whatever you have is a gap. There seems.
Yeah, I will show next will be, I think, what okay. Probably is better to answer your question.
Do you consider the mixing between S and D in principle?
You don't get mixing in our calculation. In simple, we don't get, We tried.
Oh, they just use the S or D.
Yeah.
That's like a first order phase transition. That's it. In principle, they can. There's no reason to forbid them to mix.
Yeah. So we try to mix them even in the imaginary part, like D plus SI. Okay. Yeah. We don't find the low energy, but we cannot rule out a possibility. Just it's a mean field iteration. It's something to do with the numerical. We try to see what the, I don't know whether you involved, Sosan has a paper about, okay. So, you are the first author, yeah. So that thing, we try the thing, but it's beyond the mean field theory. Yeah, we have not figured out, but we try the mean field, simplest way, it doesn't come out of this, yeah. So this is the pairing amplitude distribution, so it's just, the V's. So the white ones is zeros. So this is, the whole is S wave, okay. So this is the upper band, this is the lower band. You see, this is electron band, this is the whole band. So these are zeros, but the Fermi pocket is here. So you have, this is S wave, it's unusual S wave. You have zeros, but you don't get any zero in the quasi particle. So the black ones are the Fermi surface, okay. And those are the V's because I have diagonal and off diagonal, so you have, I think the three different colors, this is for one of them is for V plus minus, the others for V plus plus and V minus minus. Okay, that's around the Y pocket. This is around the gamma pocket in terms of the angle. That's what we plot. Okay. So you, here you do change sign here actually, but you have this is the plus, this is minus, but around the Fermi pocket you don't change sign. That's the And that's for the D wave in the momentum space, and the white ones it's the gap. It's not gap. It's V equal to zero, but the quasi particle. No, it's very tiny. Okay, one of them. So that's basically the structure of the pairing amplitude. We have electron pocket and hole pocket. They like to have a different phase for the extended S wave. In the D wave, they like to have. I think the reason you want this is because here you want to have. D wave of dominate, so that enforce this to be anti phase. So that's the D wave structure, and I think this state is stable for U over T to be small and J over U to be not too large, and this is. For J, T over U to be small, but also J over U to be large in this case. And we'll not go through these three orbital case. I think similar with the two orbital case we took a look. Okay, so I think a basic conclusion from this part is we propose a strong coupling Hamiltonian for the ion-based superconductor derived from the two orbital Hubbard model. And the extended DS wave is found most stable in a large parameter space, seems to be consistent with RPAS experiment, but D wave is also a possibility. The orbital dependent pairing arises from the doped charge carriers in this view. Our approach may be of relevance to the intermediate coupling regime, which is more appropriate for the ion nictide. For instance, if we don't stick this Hounsfield too large, then we can consider you have like a double RVB. You have two orbitals, okay, and two sides, even two holes. They have some pairing there, but you don't dope, then you don't get the carrier. When you dope, you only get a carrier. If I think another way to think about it is this system is not in the Mott insulated regime, so you can consider there are some 3D 5, there are 3D 7 state. So that will be some generalization of our approach. So this is just a comparison between ion nictide and copper oxide. I think we have cuprate here with a strong correlation, and ion nictide with multi orbitals with a modulator correlation. And there in the between, I think the layered organic conductor, I think Andrew Maria was talking about this. Okay, this is actually between, and this system is nice. You can add pressure to change from insulator to a superconductor or to a conductor. Okay, so that's the layered organic. But so I think these systems, they have some similarity where the antiferromagnetism plays an important role in the superconductivity. So I'd like to spend a few minutes to discuss the proposed the probe of antiphase S wave. Okay. So as we discussed, there's experiment evidence to say this is S-wave, and there are a lot of theoretical indication from weak coupling to a strong coupling approach. They all indicate actually this S-wave is an extended S-wave. That means you have different Fermi pocket, whole pocket around the gamma point, and the electron pocket around the pi zero pocket. And they have different phase. We call the antiphase S wave state. But this phase change is in magnitude of k, but so not by symmetry. Like D wave, you have rotate 90 degree, you get a different sign. So this is more difficult to detect. There have many experiments and proposed theories to probe antiphase S-wave. And seems this is one of the important issues for the ion nictide, because S-wave, what we want to study, you know, antiphase is one of the interesting things. So we consider the phase-sensitive experiment would provide more direct evidence to this symmetry. And so there is a phase-sensitive experiment in the 1111 compound by Tree et al. Okay, recently. And what they did is they designed it's a quite a complicated experiment. So this is basically two probes. Okay, what they do is they have a few things. They can press hard or not that hard to change the critical to kill some critical current in some grains. That's one possibility. And another thing is they have the EM probe disturb that to make the system jump from one state to another state. Okay, so what they found is you have the flux state in the loop, okay, in this this loop, they measured this. They found that this integer and the half integer jumps in both. Okay, the half integer jumps indicate there's a pi loop, and integer jump means a zero loop. So in the Josephine junction, so that is considered to be a more direct indication in support of the antiphase, because if you don't have the sign change, you don't expect a half integer in this state. Of course,
a,
you are seeing
a,
it's
a S-wave. It's an S-wave superconductor. Huh? What is A? A is an S-wave superconductor?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is a niobium.
Okay.
Yeah, this is an Naomi superconductor, and these are just the probe, you know, pick up the signal, and this is F is some EM try to disturb and to make a change, because what the part, this is the time, they want to change from one to another one, you disturb it. And they control, this is, you can control the press hard or not, so to change the junction barrier, and this is one of the way they control whether they kill critical current, because there are many grains, so it's a composite problem.
Well, there is another possibility here, because there are lots of magnetic phases here. So if magnetic phases precipitate on grain boundaries, there is a possibility of the pi shift even.
Yeah. So you are worried about the magnetic boundary. Yeah. I asked him, he said no, he doesn't think so. Okay. But this is some experiment. Okay. So you talk to him why he does not think the boundaries or this, you know. So yeah, another thing is they add what he said is maybe it's reasonable. If the current is lower, they don't see the half flux, half integer flux. They have to do something to get half flux. So this is not just because of the grain boundary, there's a magnetic phase there. If a magnetic phase, then that change of the current wouldn't change anything. They have some argument, you know. Yeah, but I'm not going to go detail this. So what we want to study is we want to design a better single crystal, see whether we can say yes or no, that kind of things. Okay. So we study two things. One is the point junction, point contact junction. The other is the planar junction. And then by studying this, we found some interesting result, and we can design a trijunction. And the trijunction, we have for particular materials, and we predict that to be the pi junction loop. So you will see that. Okay. So first, it's the simple one. It's the point contact junction. Okay, between like this ion superconductor and the conventional superconductor. Okay. And there's when I say point contact junction, that means there's no momentum conservation in this case. So that just you make consider I have a different band, different pocket. Okay. And alpha, that's the indicator band index, and you can carry all of these assuming this delta 2 is much smaller than delta 1. So this is a conventional superconductor. It's S-wave, I assume. Okay. So then you can carry out this. Finally, you find that the critical current, the sign of the critical current actually is proportional related to the hole density minus the electron density. We have a whole pocket, electron pocket. So only this quantity is important to determine the sign of the critical current. And for the, so far we have a single crystal on 1, 2, 2, and my friend did the LDA calculation to find this hole density and electron density, and conclude that in this blue the density of state on the hole pocket, and the red ones are the density of state of the electron pocket. So in the regime, large regime, actually it's independent of the hole dope or electron dope, this is a hole dominate. So that it's a zero junction. If we consider the face of the normal superconductor to be a plus, and that face is choosing arbitrary. Okay, will not change. That's a gauge choice. Then next we discuss. We look at the planar junction between aluminum and this ion nictide, and aluminum is a nearly free electron metal. So the lattice potential is very weak, can be ignored. So if I have this planar junction, I have momentum conservation in the planar. Like I said, this is XY plane, so KX, KY are conserved in this cross junction. So this is aluminum is a free electron like this. Okay, so we can calculate this. And that's the only thing we assume. And when the tunneling, you keep this KX and KY to be conserved during the tunneling process. So interesting thing is, now if you do this calculation, I think more area of the electron pocket will contribute to the tunneling process. So this give you different result from the point junction. So for in this case, we get a result, I think, let's see. Yeah, this is proportional to the whole density of state of holes minus C times density of electron. And the C we found here is 2.58. Okay, in the point junction, this C is equal to 1. So there's a regime, quite a large regime, that we can have this planar junction to be pi junction and the point junction to be the zero junction. So then we can design such a kind of setup. Okay, this is like 1,2,2 compound. This is aluminum, and this is like niobium or whatever. So you have, of course, this is just normal superconductor, you have zero junction, and this you have zero junction, this is a pi junction. So the loop is a pi junction. And we found that there's quite a large regime you can satisfy this relation, okay, for the nictide. So that, of course, the calculation is based on density function theory. There's some approximations, but because the regime is quite large, we believe it can be realized. So that's we have proposed to the experimental friends. So as a brief summary of this part is the sign of point contact junction is positive. Okay, if density of state of hole pocket is larger, otherwise it's negative. Okay, but in the planar junction between a single crystal, I think that's the condition of single crystal ion nictide and aluminum, the planar translation that enhances the contribution of electron pocket to the critical current. So we have proposed that type of junction, Josephson trijunction, to prove this anti-phase S pairing state in the compound, which I think could be interesting and could be accessible in experiment. Okay, I think, thank you.
The planar junction in the middle is also insulating barrier, right? Not just the aluminum.
Yeah. Yeah.
It needs some insulator.
Yeah. But this you are seeing very, very thin. That's in our calculation. If that insulating layer is thick, then many other things will come out.
What kind of material is aluminum oxide?
Huh?
Aluminum oxide.
I don't know what's the best, yeah. But I just leave the experiment. This year they can figure out this. The difficulty is the planar junction is not easy to make. One is you need a single crystal which you only have on the 1-2-2 compound. But this C Chang Chi has the single crystal, so he is planning to do that. I think whether he can make this planned junction, that's the technique. It may not be that.
Conservation during the tunneling is crucial in this problem.
What? Excuse me?
The momentum conservation.
Yes, yes.
In the tunnel.
Yeah,
yes.
That's a problem. I think this may work, but just because you have translational invariance in your materials doesn't mean that you get this tunneling as cleanly as you described. Because think of it this way. Suppose I have a slab of glass.
Yeah.
Okay. I send light in, and you know it'll go through, and you'll conserve momentum, blah blah blah. But if I make one side of the ground glass, okay, now the light comes in, it comes out in all directions.
Yeah.
So you have to have an interface which is smooth, if you like, or non-varying on the light scale of the Fermi wavelength. That's hard to do.
Uh huh.
In semiconductors, they can do it, but in metals, it's really hard.
I see.
So you have to.
So that's why they say planar junction. It's not easy. It's difficult.
Well, it's a planar junction. That's fine. I mean, even the tunneling through the barrier will go largely in the forward. I suppose it's perfect on this side.
Yes,
tunneling will be forward, and everything you say is true. Mm-hmm. But once you hit the other side, then if it's like ground glass, then it goes off in all directions. So you've destroyed the momentum conservation. Mm-hmm. It's really been hard to use planar tunnel junctions to see these kinds of anisotropies. Now, I'm not saying it's so bad that this won't work, but it won't be, the numbers probably wouldn't be as favorable as what you mm-hmm. see.
Yes, Peter.
I just have a couple of comments. First of all, the experimental situation that you described vis-a-vis the anisotropy was a little bit oversimplified for my tastes. There's a lot of evidence for low-lying excitations in a lot of these materials.
You mean three-dimensionality, mm-hmm. or which one?
I'm talking about in superconducting state.
Uh-huh.
Low-lying excitations, meaning power laws or
mm-hmm. yes, yeah.
something like that. So maybe nodes, maybe impurity states, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the ARP is one set of experiments, but there's some other experiments which we
yes.
obviously claims.
Yeah.
I guess we'll talk more about that on Tuesday.
Yes.
Yeah, I leave that for you. I drop a few transparent upon that. Yeah.
So the other is that I think it's kind of interesting to see the extent to which the strong coupling approach to the pairing problem and the weak coupling approaches kind of fit together. I mean, a lot of the qualitative features are very similar. The proximity of the S wave state to the D wave mm-hmm. state comes out, and also the transition between the two with the Hunsrück coupling is pretty much the same qualitative. So mm-hmm. just a remark.
Thank you. Yeah, but one thing is I did not emphasize is in strong coupling, the intra pocket is more important. I don't know what your result in the Dong Hai's functional RG result, but he tried to say it's the inter-pocket pair scattering dominate.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason that we have different details when it comes to the S-ray state.
Uh-huh.
Are you suggesting, Peter, that in a real material with you know all the vagaries that go on, you might have a D wave here and an S wave over here? Could be that extreme?
What do you mean, in the same
thing?
Well, if you had something horribly inhomogeneous vis-a-vis doping, I suppose so. I mean, there's some evidence that you have a transition.
I hadn't thought about
S-wave, you know, D-wave or from no
minor phases, which are minor, smaller regions of just air D-wave or whatever. I mean,
yeah.
that if something like that's going on, then it's not so hard to understand.
I'm certainly not. I'm certainly not trying to make that suggestion.
No,
seriously.
But you're saying you don't rule it out.
But that's a possibility. I mean, if you can vary a symmetry by doping, for example, if you have a grain boundary.
Yeah.
On which
yeah.
the chemical potential is shifted, you might have an interesting situation of the D wave pairing on the boundary and S wave on the ball,
yes.
and vice versa.
Yes.
Wow.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.